This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. 6:36 on this Saturday evening. It's cold, but it's crisp, and it's kind of got that fall feel here in Chicago. Thanks so much for joining us here. John Hansen taking you till 8 o'clock. A lot of the big stories legally this week have been centered around the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, which makes total sense. It's obviously been the big story for a while now. We're going to break down a little bit that and learn a little bit more here. Joining us in studio is Audrey Anderson, who's part of Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. Audrey, thanks for coming on the program tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you do a lot of defense work now, but you spend a lot of time in the DuPage attorney's office, which is more on the prosecutor side, right?
That's right. So I did start my career as a prosecutor at the DuPage County State Attorney's Office. And then after about 20 years, retired from there, left, and started a private practice.
And why switch to defense? Is that common amongst prosecutors who then maybe open up their own firm? They want to go on the defense side?
It is slightly common.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I think maybe just for a change, a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting, challenge, something different to defend people. And it gives us a very unique perspective when we're defending clients.
I was just going to say, because obviously as a prosecutor, you have a skill set, you know how to present that case. And having had that experience when you're approaching trial now as a defense attorney, I guess you kind of, I don't want to say tricks because they're not tricks, but you kind of know what might be in the toolbox of a prosecutor. Is that a good way to put it?
That's an excellent way to phrase it, because definitely I can see it from both perspectives, especially from being a prosecutor for that many years. I see the strengths that the prosecutor looks at and then how they view it, and the strengths as a defense attorney and how I view it from that way, from going against defense attorneys for all those years. So you're right. It gives me the dual perspective, which really is an advantage for my clients.
What sort of cases do you take on now? Well, I mean, what sort of defendants? All sorts of cases? I know you work with juveniles, too.
Right. So we do adults and juveniles, and we do everything from traffic to felonies. So a lot of the time we handle bigger cases, especially drug cases or sex offenses, murders, just because the last decade plus of my life as a prosecutor, I was in the drug unit, supervisor of that, handling that in a lot of juvenile cases.
It is so important to have defense attorneys like you. And of course, we have so many public defenders as well that are doing the Lord's work in many ways. I just wish you could you speak just for a moment to the idea of why, you know, a lot of people give defense attorneys sometimes a hard time because sometimes they're defending quote unquote guilty people, but it's like a backbone of our country to have a right to that defense, right?
Absolutely. And that's very true, because people ask how you can defend someone that's clearly guilty. But that's the great thing about our legal system, is making sure that the prosecutors and police officers did everything right. And that's how the system works. It's the state's burden, and we have the right to proceed to a trial and make the state and the government prove it.
It's interesting, even watching the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, there's some certain things that might make me twinge a little bit, but I appreciate that the rules are there just in case I was ever in a situation like that, right? We all want those protections from certain overreaches of the government or whatever it may be, and have the burden on the state as opposed to the burden on the defendant. So, you know, just kind of broad strokes, because I know you're also busy. I'm sure you haven't watched every second of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. But just overall, your thoughts on what we've been seeing and maybe some of the reaction that people have been having.
I think that it's probably very difficult for both the prosecutors and the defense attorneys to try a case that has so much media attention.
Yeah.
So much attention to detail and everything that they say and witnesses. But they obviously have so much experience putting on this case, all the witnesses, getting through all the evidence and exhibits, and of course being in front of that judge who is known for his unique antics and comments in the courtroom. So that also puts a little added stress on the prosecutor and the defense attorneys.
So, okay, I want to ask that. As in a high-profile case, I'm sure you've worked some of yours as well, where there's reporters in the room, let alone being live-streamed, and a national case. Do you get nervous? I mean, be honest.
I think, yes, we do. But then you channel, and you're taught from when you first start as a prosecutor or defense attorney to channel that nervousness to excitement to proceed to your case.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to use that to make it better and to really just focus in on the specific details, the witnesses, the cross-examination, the evidence, and the preparation.
I think a lot of people, their experience of what a courtroom may be is what they see on Law and Order or another show. And I think sometimes when we see like a big case like the Kyle Rittenhouse case, it kind of changes our perspective. They're like, oh, that's right. I don't want to say it's more mundane because it's all important stuff, but it's not as high theatrics as what we see on TV.
That's very true. In real cases, for real life, there's a lot of minutia and the minor details, foundational issues, kind of boring testimony when you're looking at from the outside that you don't see on a Law and Order.
Yeah. When I wanted to be a lawyer because I saw Billy Flynn in Chicago and thought it was all song and dance and performance, then I learned it wasn't, and that's why I do this on this side of the microphone instead of on the other side. You mentioned the judge, and he's admonished the prosecutor a couple times. He's had some interesting comments. Not to specifically talk about this judge, but I guess broadly speaking, do you get unique characters in judges? I mean, do they let their personal opinion, not necessarily about the case, but their personal personalities, is that common in a courtroom that, you know, it kind of comes out a little bit?
Sometimes that's very true. There are judges that have unique characteristics or tactics or responses that really do exist in real life in the counties around Northern Illinois. That's very true.
And that's just something you deal with and smile about. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's all people. They're all human beings that are managing the courtroom, that are lawyers, that are defense attorneys, that are prosecutors. We all have our own unique personalities, and we're just kind of seeing it 24/7 on this trial right now.
Right. And so we have to just look back. When you're a prosecutor or a defense attorney going through it, it seems as if you're being scolded like a child. But then you really have to think of it from the judge's perspective. You have two opposite sides battling out for what they believe is correct, the guilt of the defendant or the innocence of your clients. And the judge is really a mediator. And with all the public scrutiny and everyone watching it and it being live streamed and then it can go up on appeal, the judge is also have a lot of pressure that we just don't really think about as attorneys.
I was kind of surprised when Kyle Rittenhouse even took the stand. I mean, how unusual is that for a defendant to take the stand?
It's somewhat unusual, but in these types of situations where the argument and the claim is self-defense or defense of another, it's really important in a lot of cases to have a client testify, especially one who is so young. He was 17 at the time. He's now only 18. He has no background, no criminal history that can come back and haunt him as he testifies. It's very important for the jury as a defense attorney to see him as a young kid and what he was feeling at the moment, as opposed to doing cross-examination of witnesses or putting on witnesses to have them try to get the jury to feel what the defendant was feeling at the time.
It is risky, though, right?
Oh, very risky. And it takes a lot of preparation for a client. And it takes a certain level of intelligence and a client not having an outburst in court and really holding it together.
Right. And obviously, it's not just their lawyer talking to them. That's how it starts. But, of course, a cross-examination as well. I want to ask, we'll talk about the preparation after the commercial break, but one last thing about even calling a defendant to the stand. Is there ever cases where a defense attorney would wait to make that call till later in the case? Meaning, all right, the prosecution's presented their arguments, they've rested their case. If you feel like it's going well and you're like, I don't want to mess, you know, that is a potential pitfall, can you adjust mid-trial?
Absolutely. Adjusting mid-trial and even in the defendant's case in chief as to whether or not your client's going to testify or what your client's going to testify about. It's really something that you have to prepare your client for and make sure he or she is understanding that you may have started with the general scope of all these things you want to get out through your client, but as the trial is proceeding, you realize maybe all that doesn't need to come out of your client, and it's best that he or she doesn't testify, or at least be more limited in what they testify to.
As someone who spent time as a prosecutor, now a defense attorney, do you have a good read on it? I've talked to lawyers who say that they know what the outcome is going to be, or at least they think they are. But is it really hard? Because all of us right now are kind of analyzing, is he going to be found guilty? Is he going to be found not guilty? I don't want you to speculate on that. But do you think attorneys have a good read when it goes to the jury about what's going to happen?
With jury trials, it's really so much more difficult because it's more of a wild card factor because they're not involved in the system day in and day out. They're not as predictable as a trial in front of a judge, a bench trial. So people do try to guess, attorneys do try to guess, but it's very difficult to say.
As for us watching and we think we know which way the jury is going to go, I'd caution people about that because I imagine it's different sitting in the jury box. And also, we've gotten to see a lot of the conversations that the jury hasn't gotten to see, correct?
Correct. There's so many things that are outside the jury's presence that are excluded that they just don't have any idea of because for evidentiary reasons.
Yeah, and also, I mean, when juries go into that room and deliberate together, I mean, they're having real tough conversations with each other, and jurors can sway and convince other jurors, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And don't forget, these are 12 complete strangers to one another that are thrown into a tiny room. They have to make a decision. So you have different personalities that people are getting to know one another, and then you have to make this huge decision about guilt or innocence.
Yeah. You might have, like, if I've never gotten into a jury, I probably shouldn't say anything because I don't want to be ever excluded, but I find myself to have a strong personality. I worry a little bit that I'd be trying to bring people over to one side or another, but I guess that's part of the jury system. All right. Before we go to the commercial break, AndersonAA.com is where people can go for more information about you, right, Audrey?
That's correct. Thanks.
All right, and all that you do. All right, so that's the website. The phone number, I'll give that out right now, too, 630-877-5800. That's 630-877-5800. More with Audrey Anderson after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Continuing our conversation with Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorney and Advisors, attorneys, I should say. Audrey, we were talking about Kyle Rittenhouse trial. I think everyone saw his testimony, or I've seen clips of it. And all anyone could talk about was he crying? Was he not crying? Audrey, that's a dangerous game to play, right? Because everyone reacts differently. We don't really know, do we?
No, we really don't. And it could be fake tears, but again, it could be real. He's only 18.
Right.
You know, so this is a traumatic experience for anyone, let alone a teenager.
Now, I would love to say that, hey, jurors, don't look at emotions. Try and just listen to the testimony, the words. That's impossible, though, right? Jurors are going to look at that and talk about that in their deliberations, most likely, right?
Oh, definitely. And I've talked to jurors afterwards. I always try to, just to see what works for them or what they thought was important for a guilt or innocence. And they look at everything. They look at how you're sitting, your facial expressions, witnesses in the jury box, other people in the gallery. They look at everything. Eye contact.
Sometimes the things that you wish they wouldn't look at, right? Or not that they wouldn't, because it's up to them, however they want to determine it. But it's like you prepare for all these X, Y, and Z things, and it's like, oh, I didn't believe the way he did that, or I didn't think she was honest in that. That's got to be sort of maddening a little bit.
It is, and that's why it's so important with clients, defendants, that you make sure that how they're answering your questions in direct examination, they answer the prosecutor the same way and not have a battle between the defendant as he's testifying and the prosecutor, so that it seems sincere when he's responding to their questions, too.
So what you're saying is when the defense attorney is questioning him, a friendly attorney, I guess you could say, matter-of-factly, you know, whatever the emotion is, do the exact same thing for the prosecutor so it doesn't look like you're dismissive immediately or on the defensive.
Correct. So it doesn't seem as if the defense is so scripted, so prepared, that it seems like you're just as prepared when the prosecutor is cross-examining you and that you are not thinking of your responses, but they flow naturally. So as if you are telling the truth and not trying to make up the truth and lying before the jurors.
When as we pivot here to talking about coaching or practicing or whatever with defendants, a lot of people's ears perk up and say, well, they should just go out there and tell the truth. What do you need coaching for? As if coaching seems like it's this putting on an act. But really, a lot of it is just preparing a defendant for a very stressful situation. Right?
That's so true. And not just defendants. I mean, every attorney prepares every single witness. So, you know, those prosecutors are preparing their police officers, their civilians, just as strong and just as hard as defense attorneys are preparing their defendants.
Do defense attorneys go into the nitty gritty, though, about where to look and what words to use about specific questions, almost rehearsing what prosecutors might ask, too?
Yes, we do the exact same thing that the prosecutors do, how to maintain eye contact, not only with me as your attorney, but the prosecutor, and also to look at the judge and the jury. Because if you're looking at the jurors in the eye, to show them that you are sincere and you're not afraid that they're looking at you as well.
How do you strike that balance, though, of teaching or trying to coach someone, prepare them, I guess is probably the better word to use, prepare them for the situation, but not get them to the point where they seem fake or fabricated or not themselves? That's got to be a fine line.
It's a very fine line and very difficult, and it really depends on your clients and your client's abilities to answer questions and be put under that pressure and microscope.
So when it comes to determining whether to even put someone on a stand, we talked about it beforehand, but you only can give so much advice, because it's really one of the things, besides the plea, that the defendant really can direct, right?
Right. It's just the defendant's own decision. Even if his attorney, her attorney decides or says you should absolutely not get on the stand, if your client wants to get up there and testify, she has the absolute right to get up there and testify.
Now, if someone doesn't testify or chooses not to, is that laid out in court? Like, for example, does the judge, is there a point where the judge asks the defendant directly, do you want to testify or not?
Yes. So at that point, the defense attorney usually will ask the judge to approach and ask for a sidebar outside the presence of the jury, have them excused, and then the judge questions and admonishes the defendant as to him giving up his right to testify and whether or not he's doing it voluntarily, knowingly, and that it's his decision.
Right. And also that I imagine if he chooses not to, the jurors are instructed not to take that in any consideration, right?
Correct. There's a specific jury instruction that it does not have anything to do with his or her guilt and that they have the absolute right not to testify.
So as the jurors go into the deliberation room, what do you guys do as you wait? I've always wondered that. I know that it depends, I guess, on how long the deliberations go for. What are those moments like for you? I mean, obviously, for the defendant itself, this is a huge situation. You probably ride that roller coaster too a bit.
You definitely do. The first couple minutes are relief that it's done, that it's finally, they're back there. And then you realize, oh my gosh, they're actually back there. They're deciding it. You're done. So everything that you put out, that's what it is, and that's what they have to consider.
Yeah. Oh, that's got to be such gut-wrenching moments. And then just the moments, I mean, even just watching big verdicts in the past where the jurors come in, they pass the note over to the judge. I'm probably looking at the judge's eyes to try and see if it gives you any indication, even though you know the foreman's going to read it or forewoman's going to read it in a moment. That's got to be the most tense moment, I'm sure.
Right. When they come in, you always wonder if they're going to look at a specific attorney or defendant or look down to try to see if that's some sort of indicator of guilt or innocence.
Oh, that's important stuff. All right, I hope you'll come back and chat more about these sorts of things. Anderson Attorneys and Advisors, give me the elevator pitch. Who should be reaching out to you guys?
Well, anyone in the northern suburbs that has a defense case pending, bigger cases, drug cases, sex offense cases, we're there to help.
AndersonAA.com, the phone number 630-877-5800. It was really great to meet you, Audrey. Thanks for coming in.
It was great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it.